The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we were talking about sea urchins, sand dollars, heart urchins, and so on, simply as representatives of a very unique group of organisms that we find in nature. And among other things, we had noted the epidemic that destroyed a particular sea urchin in Jamaica. And as a consequence of that, although the other urchins were not bothered by that, these particular ones were heavy grazers on the algal population. And with their removal, the algae began to increase. And the consequence of that in the coral around Jamaica, many of them have been pretty well destroyed. Whether they will recover or not remains to be seen. And the fact is, as far as I'm aware, nobody really knows what caused that particular group to die. Could be a variety of causes, but as far as I'm aware, nobody really knows. Now let's look a little bit at the sand dollars, which are the other, probably the more common of the organisms found in this particular class. On the beaches in South Carolina, they're very common. Often what you see are simply the test, the shell that actually makes up the shape of the body after the organism has died. The exterior part, the tube feet, the little short spines, the dermis, the covering on the outside of the body simply will deteriorate, and you're left with that rather flat, sometimes fairly large calcareous test or shell. I have seen sand dollars that get up to be 3-4 inches in diameter. I would assume there are probably places where they get much larger than that. But at any rate, these are the organisms we're talking about. When they are alive, of course, they are covered with little short protuberances, spines in some case, tube feet, etc. We mentioned briefly last time that the sea urchins move by means of tube feet and spine. And sand dollars apparently use primarily their tube feet. I remember we were on the beach one time and I had picked up some. I really didn't know the difference then between, I didn't know how to tell whether one was alive or not, and I'd picked up a number of other shells and they were on the sink, the drain board beside the sink, and I was washing off the other shells and I noticed that one of the sea urchins that I had put down, it seemed to me, was in a different spot from where I had left it. And as I got to watching it, I noticed it was moving very slowly across the surface. And so when these animals are alive, they have a somewhat mossy-looking structure that's on the outside of the body, and they do have the capability of moving around a little bit. To me, interestingly, they also have the ability to bury themselves in the sand. And it will occur much more rapidly than you might expect it to. You wouldn't think that something, an organism that was flat, as these things are, would actually have the ability simply to sink into the sand. And yet, if you watch one, you'll see that not only do they have that ability, it occurs much more rapidly than I would expect it to. So here are simply some very interesting, unusual, I try to stay away generally from the using the word unique, but these organisms are unique. There are not other organisms that are just like them. Even the others in the same class are somewhat different. And they are simply evidence of the fact that here are organisms that are standing alone among all of the other organisms. There are no organisms that lead up to them. We are not aware of any common ancestor for the sand dollar. We are not aware of any organisms that the sand dollars have been ancestral to. And one of the ideas that we pursue regularly is simply not just the difficulty, but the impossibility of the idea that one kind of organism is going to give rise to a different kind of organism. Now, we've talked at some length in previous programs about the phylogenetic trees, the notion that you had a particular organism that has given rise to all sorts of other organisms, and I won't go back and repeat all of that. presumably, there was at one time a single organism that gave rise to all the rest of them. Now, if you have followed our discussion through the invertebrate phyla, you are aware of monstrously different organisms. And the notion that there was one organism which had the genetic capability of producing all of the variety we have talked about is simply foolishness. The evolution is to the contrary notwithstanding, and the device of trying to argue, well, we don't say that in the case of humans that humans descended from monkeys, but we'd say that humans and monkeys had a common ancestor, and fuss over that as you choose. The position of the evolutionist is that there were organisms which gave rise to unbelievably different offspring. And as I say, we've addressed ourselves to this often, and I won't repeat that, except to make this remark. One of the first things anyone who takes genetics learns is simply that parents do not give rise to offspring that are wildly different from themselves. We don't have starfish giving rise to sand dollars or vice versa. And while that might be a desirable characteristic from the standpoint of the evolutionist, there's not any evidence that this kind of thing happens. So this is one of the things that we keep trying to emphasize, and while I'm sure it is something that the average person with a reasonable amount of common sense understands, it is still a point that is repeated over and over and is a necessary part of any evolutionary approach to this. So we have here in this group, this class, sea urchins, sand dollars, heart urchins. Those of you that live around the beach will find a fairly large calcareous test or shell. I've seen them up 5 or 6 inches on occasion that are not quite hemispherical, but they are certainly much thicker than sand dollars. And because of their pentamerous makeup, the five-parted structure, they are put here in this particular class with the other organisms that are here. As we talk about the other groups, we're going to talk about the sea cucumbers next. I don't have a lot of experience with sea cucumbers. I'm partial, I guess, to the starfish primarily because that happens to be the organism that we are dissecting in laboratory all the time. So I do know something about that. But probably the sea cucumber is as unique as any of the other organisms. And so they're all lumped here together for the reason I've mentioned, but there certainly is no evidence that organisms in one of these classes can give rise to organisms in a different class. And by the same token, we really do not have any evidence of there being any kind of common ancestor or connecting link between them. Now, if a person wishes to believe that, that is certainly their right. But the question then has to be fussed over at some point. Is this a reasonable idea? Is there some evidence to support it? Does it make sense within the framework of what we know about how organisms pass on characteristics, etc.? And this is part of the whole argument that occurs between creationists and evolutionists. And my hope, again, is that some of the information, at least on these programs, will help those of you who have trusted the Lord as your Savior and who argue that the Bible is trustworthy and authoritative, that you will gain some confidence from this, that the Scripture is trustworthy and authoritative. It is something that we can trust. And I hope that the information that you're getting here will help in some degree to do that. Now, let's look at the sea cucumbers for a moment. As I mentioned, they're very unusual. Again, if you have been around the beach at all, at some time you probably have found these things washed up on the beach. I remember we were down in, I think it was Pensacola one time, after a storm, and they were lying around all over the beach. As far as I am aware, people do not eat the organisms that we find in the echinoderms. I don't know any good reason why they couldn't, apart from the spines, but I just, maybe people do. I don't know. I'm not aware of that. But you find these things on the beach, and they look very much like what they're named after, a cucumber. They're not usually green, and as a matter of fact, they can be almost any color. But they are an elongate, soft-bodied structure. The ones that we saw get up to be, 6-8 inches long. I assume probably there are some that are bigger than that. But they do not in any way resemble either of the classes we've talked about. There is no one in the world that would confuse a sea cucumber with a brittle starfish or a sea cucumber with a sand dollar. And again, the makeup of the body is one of the reasons for including them in the phylum, the echinoderms. Let me read you an introductory comment again from our invertebrate zoo book. In a phylum characterized by odd animals, class Holothuroidea is simply the class name for these organisms, the sea cucumbers, contains members that both structurally and physiologically are among the strangest. These animals have a remarkable resemblance to the vegetable after which they are named. Compared to the other echinoderms, the Holothurians are greatly elongated in the oral-ab-oral axis, which makes them the long, round things like a cucumber. And the ossicles are much reduced in most, so that the animals are soft-bodied. Some species crawl on the surface of the sea bottom. Others are found beneath rocks. Some are burrowers. And simply from that information, you could conclude correctly that these are very unusual organisms. The ossicles that were mentioned, if you remember our first program, we talked about these as being one of the unique characteristics that we find in Echinodermata. And I suspect it is because of this, these structures that the sea cucumbers really are placed here in the first place. They are different from the ossicles of the other organisms. These are simply little structures that are found in the dermis, the outer covering, and both in shape and structure, that perhaps appearance is a better word here. Many of the ossicles in sea cucumbers look almost like buttons with holes in them, and they really do not resemble those of the starfish in any way. But they are characteristics that are found, and this is part of the reason that they would be included in the group itself. If you were to go to an aquarium and see living ones, you would find them that really vary away from this cucumber-shaped thing to some degree. Some of them have pointed structures on the outside of the body. Almost any color you want to talk about. Red is a very common one. Yellow and orange you will often find. And when we look at their anatomy, I've tried to stay away from using the technical terminology of the anatomy of these organisms, because to a person who has no knowledge of biology, I suspect it is pretty much a waste of time. But the digestive system, the reproductive system, the respiratory system, all of these things are very different. The arrangement of them is very different from the same system in other organisms of the phylum. There are similarities there, and it's upon the basis of these similarities that they are put together into the same category. If you live down on the beach sometime, it might be interesting for you to get representatives of as many of these organisms in the Echinodermata as you can. Starfish, brittle starfish, sea cucumbers, sand dollars, sea urchins, and simply set them down in front of you and look at them. And if you were the first person that ever saw these, I'm not sure you would immediately leap to the conclusion that all of these organisms ought to be lumped together in the same category. There are reasons that they are put there, but they are not readily apparent. They have to do with the inner structure. the anatomical features and in some case physiological features. I'm not trying to argue here that they ought to be in very different, they ought to be in different phyla. I'm just saying that the similarities between them are often not very apparent, and there are individuals who are knowledgeable about the group who would argue, I think, in some cases, that they probably don't belong together. But that is not the not something we're attempting to fuss over here. But I would simply have you observe the fact that here are half a dozen, five different varieties, kinds of organisms, very different, no reproductive connection between them. And they are evidence for the fact that there was an intelligent creator who made them that way. And simply accept that, be willing to grant to the creator the ability to create different organisms and put them into nature to do the thing that he intends for them to do.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.